With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to There Is No Offseason, the Dynasty Baseball podcast at Baseball Prospectus. My name is Jesse Roach. I'm a Dynasty writer and ranker at Baseball Prospectus. I am responsible for the top 500 Dynasty rankings and the top 500 Dynasty prospect rankings. You can follow me on Twitter at JAROCHE6. This week on Tino, I'm here to discuss third baseman, and I think it goes without saying that third base is one of the most top-heavy positions this year. And to start, I think it's very important to discuss that top-heavy nature and how there is a massive cliff after the top eight at the position in redraft formats, and how it is going to influence draft position for these players in redraft, and how that influence is going to actually leak into how we approach this position in Dynasty. So I mentioned that the position's incredibly top heavy. In fact, of the top eight players at this position, we see five players that are third base eligible. This includes Bobby Witt Jr. that go within the top 25 in standard redraft formats. That is 20% of the first 25 picks go to third base, which is truly incredible. And, you know, if you extend that beyond, you have Gunnar Henderson, who leaks into that group as well not too long after that. You have Jordan Walker for dynasty purposes. And all of a sudden, third base looks very good at the very top. You know, the top eight at the position are arguably all top 60 players in dynasty, which is rare. You don't really see that at many positions. We'll get to shortstop next week, and shortstop is definitely one of the positions where you're going to see a lot of talent at the top. But that's really what defines the position at third base. It's very, very top heavy with a very talented group. After that, though, there is a massive chasm. In redraft formats on NFBC, there's a 50-point difference between Gunnar Henderson, who's the eighth third base eligible player drafted, and Max Muncy, who's the ninth third base eligible player drafted. And I think it really shows that this mid-tier at third base is quite weak in general. I think when you compare it to a lot of other positions in particular as well, there's just a lot of questions. I think you have players that potentially just possess limited upside, and there are other players that just possess mountains of risk at the position. So if you do not come away from your draft with one of the top third basemen, you're kind of scrambling a lot of times in redraft. As such, I would highly recommend, to be honest, drafting and targeting third base early in redraft formats. And I think this is how kind of just goes to how I approach drafts. If it's just a standard draft where it's like a snake draft, once you get your draft position, you should map out kind of how you want to approach your draft, where certain positions and tiers at that position you want to try and target. And third base is definitely, I think, a high priority one. You know, it's a position that I'd love to come out of drafts with a third baseman within the first two rounds. And if it comes with stolen bases from someone like a Jose Ramirez or a Bobby Witt Jr., that's great. But I'm okay with waiting on stolen bases in order to try and lock up third base. And I just do think it's very much high priority. And I think that is going to influence how, you know, the valuation of players later at the position as well. I think you're seeing, and we are seeing, ADPs that do not reflect actual like projections or projected cost for these players after pick 150. The 150, the 250 range, a lot of those players that are with third base eligibility have inflated draft costs because of how weak the position is and how shallow it is after the top. And I think that those inflated draft costs that we're seeing in redraft are leaking into dynasty valuation, and I just would caution against it because this position, while in the short term is very much top heavy and shallow, it's going to get better. And I'll be discussing some of the best and top third base prospects later, but a lot of them are going to arrive this year and produce. So as such, I just wouldn't necessarily harp as much on getting one of the top third basemen in Dynasty. It'd be great to get one, but if you don't get one, it's fine. You can pair one of the aging third basemen that with holes or one of the limited upside younger players at third base with one of the higher upside prospects. I'm just not as concerned in Dynasty as I am in Redraft, but in Redraft, it's definitely a high priority position, and I'm definitely approaching it that way this year. Now, before we get to the position and the top players of the position, I want to take a second to talk about Fantrax. Fantrax is one of the top platforms for Dynasty Baseball leagues. It has unparalleled customization options for commissioners, an unparalleled player pool that is incredibly deep. There's very good customer service at Fantrax. They are very readily willing to add players to the player pool, for example, or address questions or concerns you have about the platform. It is my preferred platform for all of my leagues, and I've been trying to push people to put leagues on Fantrax because I think it's just a be the best option right now in the industry. There is a promo that is run through Baseball Prospectus. If you go to fantrax.com/BP, you can get entered to win a signed jersey or ball. And it's always something really nice. So go sign up for Fantrax. Go start your league over there. There's always new Dynasty leagues forming. At Dynasty One Stop is a great commissioner who forms leagues and Dynasty leagues on Fantrax. And if you're really looking to join a new league and or get your feet wet with Dynasty, go give him a holler on Twitter. All right, let's move to the position and the top players at the position. Since Bobby Witt Jr. is eligible at shortstop, we will be discussing Bobby Witt Jr. next week when we discuss shortstops. But I will talk about him briefly here and touch on the fact that because he's eligible at third base and because third base is very much a top-heavy position with limited depth, I do think a lot of people are going to be playing Bobby Witt Jr. at third base this year. I think a lot of people who are drafting Bobby Witt Jr. in the first round in redraft formats, for example, are probably drafting him as their starting third baseman. And I do not blame them. I think that he does add a lot of value at third base, arguably more value than in shortstop, especially in shallower formats where, shortstop does also experience a cliff, but it comes later. And the cliff is steeper at shortstop, but if you're in a 12-teamer, for example, you can easily weather that because there's easily 12 shortstops that I would feel very comfortable with starting on a week-to-week basis. There may not be 12 third basemen, and we'll get to that. So I would think that for people who have Bobby Witt Jr., they're likely playing him at third base. In Dynasty, it's a little different because you are anticipating that he's going to lose third base eligibility and be a shortstop only player. So you may have another third baseman on your roster and be moving Witt to shortstop. Either way, I think that additional flexibility with his positional flexibility does add a bit of value to Witt. And I do think he stands ahead of everyone else for a lot of reasons that I'll get into next week. After Witt, and this, we're gonna. There's a lot of very good talent at third base at the top. There are four players in particular after Witt who are all first and second round picks in both redraft and dynasty formats. And we're gonna start with Jose Ramirez. I think a lot of people are maybe reading a little bit too much into what we saw late in the season from Jose Ramirez. And it's true, he really did struggle from June onward. And in particular, his performance, he had 264 with 13 home runs and 7 stolen bases over his final 97 games, which is not great. Not exactly what we expected from Jose Ramirez when we drafted him, especially after his huge start. He still went 29-20, and he has had five straight 20-20 seasons. Not many players can actually, speak to that type of production. Again, I'm not too concerned about his late season swoon or second half swoon. I think it's almost directly linked to a thumb injury. He tore his UCL and his thumb in June, and he played through it all year. This same injury happened to Salvador Perez, and Salvador Perez underwent in-season surgery. And when he returned in a couple months, he was back to his normal self. And I expect the same for Jose Ramirez, who did undergo surgery in November. I think that he'll come into the season fully healthy and be back to his normal power-hitting ways. So the fact that he made more weak contact last year, struggled against lefties, and his power declined, I'm just generally think it's probably a product of the thumb injury. Meanwhile, he is now in his 30s. He's on the wrong side of 30, but a lot of the production is very stable. And he's, I think, a player who, as a switch hitter with the elite type of contact rates that he has, I think should thrive, especially since the new rule changes almost certainly benefit him. He's a switch hitter, like I said, but as a lefty, which is obviously the side he hits from the most, he's been shifted in over 90% of plate appearances the last 3 years, and it's been over 50% since 2018, and he has a ridiculous difference in weighted on base average with and without a shift. Of course, I take those statistics with a grain of salt because he gets shifted so much that the times when he hits without a shift, it's just a small sample. So I do think he stands to benefit. I mean, a very much a pull centric hitter, and his 264 batting average on balls in play since 2018, I think that's going to improve. I mean, if it even gets up to like 280, which he was at last year, I think it means that we're going to see continued strong, solid batting averages from Jose Ramirez. Meanwhile, the base running rules, the pitch clock and the limited pickoff attempts should help him on the bases because he's not by any means like an absolute burner. He's a solid runner, above average runner, but he steals so many bases based on savvy and instincts rather than pure speed. So I think these rules all will benefit him. I think there's a chance we could see another 30-30 season from Jose Ramirez. Pacoda actually projects a 30-30 season for him. I think that there's a really legitimate argument to be made that he's the number one option in redraft formats. I actually did draft him in a mock draft, number one overall, in an early mock in redraft because I knew third base was rough and I wanted to lock in someone who could give me power, speed, and average, basically lock, do give me above average production and plus production in many of the five categories in standard formats and lock up third base. I think that is there's a lot of to be said about having Jose Ramirez at the top in some formats. It's definitely, if I were to have the first overall pick in a redraft format, I'm going to be considering strongly Jose Ramirez. So after Jose Ramirez, we have two, for dynasty purposes, we have two very similar sluggers. It's crazy to say this, but Rafael Devers and Austin Riley, both of them have, hit for average. They both hit for huge power. They are one and two in 90th percentile exit velocity at the position, both over 108 miles an hour, which is very, very comfortably plus plus. Both of them, their power plays to all fields as well. They're not straight pull hitters. They are line drive hitters, and they're going to hit for average, even though neither of them are like elite contact hitters. And their contact rates are generally borderline because they make such hard contact, and because it's to all fields, and because they generate so many line drives, they should still hit for solid average. Riley actually last year was lifted the ball more, and because of that, his average dropped, but he also hit 38 home runs. I think that there's a chance that both of them have very similar production this year. But let's talk about Devers right now. Devers last year got off to just a roaring start, hit 324, 22 home runs over his first 87 games. And then the day after the All-Star break, he suffered a hamstring injury. And then when he returned, he just wasn't the same. It's not necessarily only the hamstring injury that we can blame. There are some approach-related issues. You know, Devers is aggressive. He's prone to chase. And he does occasionally have slumps because of his approach. And, you know, I don't think the approach really is going to change. But he makes so much hard contact so consistently. This is a player who's very consistently about 50% hard hit rate. I think that he's going to be reliable. He's just 26 years old still, and he's entering his prime. The concern I'd have with Devers in terms of redraft formats, besides his struggles to end the year, is that his supporting class is slightly worse. You know, they lost Xander Bogaerts. They did bring in Masataka Yoshida. I'm just a little concerned about the run production potential that he's going to have with, you know, if the players around him just are not, you know, either getting on base enough or, you know, driving him in when he's on base. So I'm a little concerned there. But generally, you know, this is a very much a stable performer, a stable profile. He does get dinged by Fenway. You know, his home park is, you know, devastating to left-handed power, but he has the type of power that can overcome it and has overcome it. And I think he'll get back to 290, 30-plus home runs moving forward. And, of course, we saw what his upside is, you know, the first half last year in 2021 where he hit 38 home runs. He has huge upside, as much upside as just about any player at the position. What separates him from, like, Cozy Ramirez and that type of tier in redraft purposes is he's not going to run. I know he's ran before in the past, but he's slow and he looks so awkward running, to be honest. I just don't think it's going to happen even with the new rule changes. Finally, next player is Austin Riley. And I mentioned Riley and how he hit 38 home runs last year. You know, he made a lot of improvement last year. I mean, the year before he hit over 300 with 30 home runs. And I guess on its face, maybe last year wasn't quite as good in some ways. But everything basically ticked up. He hit for more power. He led the position in power rates in general. And he made more contact and he had better plate discipline. And, you know, he's going to be 26 years old shortly after opening day. He's just a shade younger than Rafael Devers. He is, believe it or not, a slightly worse defender than Devers, and I think there's a greater risk that we see Riley potentially move off the position. But because the Braves have Matt Olson locked up for a long period of time, I think they're going to continue to run out Riley. You know, Riley does some things well at third base, and I think that there's a hope that he can continue to stick there long term. But, you know, generally both these players, I think, offer huge upside. I think Riley maybe offers a touch more home run upside because Devers is such a heavy off-field hitter that it does limit his power upside in games. But because of that, I think Devers offers more batting average upside. So honestly, pick your poison. I think both are fantastic options. I think, if anything, in redraft, I'd probably maybe lean Riley ever so slightly because of his supporting cast and because he didn't have and suffer the second half swoon and difficulties that Devers did. The last of this elite group at the position is Manny Machado, who's been a stalwart here for a long period of time. He is one of the most consistent players in baseball. Over the last 8 seasons, he's averaged 282, 34 home runs, and 10 stolen bases. I mean, it's just about as close as it comes to a slam dunk 280, 30 home run hitter. And, you know, he doesn't have much speed these days, but the Padres are willing to let him run. He's an instinctual runner. He picks his spots. And I think, you know, double-digit stolen bases is something that is possible for sure, especially given the new rule changes. And, you know, the power remains very good, even though it has declined. A lot of things actually declined last year, despite having a career-best year for him in a lot of ways. His power metrics declined, his contact rates declined, and his plate discipline rates declined. He was a bit more aggressive, and because of that, he let made less contact, basically, and his strikeout rate topped 20% for the first time in his career, which I think goes more to the fact that he's just been incredible for so long than to the fact that he is, you know, in decline necessarily. But it is worth noting, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30, just like Jose Ramirez. He does hit in a very difficult home park. He's been able to overcome that for some time, and I'm generally not too concerned about him moving forward, but he's, you know, very soon he's going to be 32 years old mid-season next year, and you know, I think at that point things kind of normally trend down for a lot of hitters in particular, and so I think that Machado still remains a very good dynasty option, and of course a fantastic redraft option, but I would be a little bit wary about him, at least more so than the others. He's certainly well, you know, a tier behind the group I've already discussed. That said, you know, he's going to have a fantastic supporting cast, you know, at some point this year, presuming health for all these players. He'll have Juan Soto, Xander Bogaerts, Fernando Tatis Jr. all hitting around him. And that's just going to be such incredible potential run production for Machado. So I think Machado is certainly one of the most stable position players in all of baseball, especially at third base. And I think using a second round pick or even a first round pick on Machado in redraft formats is a strong play because of the type of five category production he provides, particularly in home runs and run production. So very much still in on Machado. Just I think I'd be a little bit wary for Dynasty, and I think we're nearing a point where maybe it's time to try and float him and see if you can get a little younger at the position, if you could get like a Gunnar Henderson and plus, like Gunnar Henderson plus for Manny Machado is something maybe I'd pursue. Speaking of, let's move to the next grouping at the position. So that's obviously I just discussed about the top first two rounds in both redraft and in Dynasty, all those players. The next group gets kind of divided, right? We have Gunnar Henderson, who is the up-and-coming superstar, potentially, at the position. We have Nolan Arenado, who's one of the players that is aging up, but coming off one of the best years of his career in St. Louis. And we have Alex Bregman, who has not ever returned to the heights he showed in 2019 or 2018, but he's shown flashes of it. And I think there's a chance he could get close to what he was this coming year. But between these three, I think it depends on how you approach it. For me, I think in Dynasty is very clearly Henderson number one, Arenado number two, and Bregman number three. In redraft, you know, right now the ADP has Arenado one, Bregman two, Henderson three, and I think Henderson represents a fantastic buying opportunity in redraft. And I'll explain why, but I have an article on BP for fantasy third baseman to target, and I wrote up Henderson and why I think he's a great option in redraft formats this year, given his ADP. His ADP is around a little over after 90, and he's the last player of all of this top group at third base, the top eight at the position for redraft purposes. And that's the first six rounds, basically, in a 15-team league. After that, there's a massive drop-off. And I really think that you want to get one of these players. So if you have missed out on one of the top options in the first two rounds, I really would try and aggressively try and target Henderson, probably in round as soon as round five, because he has elite upside. As soon as this year, he could be a player that has that type of Bobby Witt Jr. type season immediately. He's likely going to hit in the middle of an up-and-coming Orioles lineup. In his debut, he flashed everything you're looking for a potential fantasy superstar. He flashed power, he flashed speed, and he flashed an impeccable plate approach. I think Gunnar Henderson is just one of those players. He's number one player. The prospect team ranked him number one among all prospects this year. They feel most confident in his future hit tool. I think he's a player who could hit the ground running as soon as this year. I mean, he had, a very strong debut. In his debut, granted, it was a small sample, but he had a hard hit rate of 53.7%. He put a lot of balls on the ground, mind you, and I do think that is going to be a concern moving forward. He did put an a decent bit on the ground in the minors last year as well, but his ground ball rate in the majors was 57.3%. I do think he is a bit of a line drive off fields hitter, so he's going to maybe not hit for as much power as his role data maybe suggests he'll hit for, but I do think he's going to be a very good power option. Last year, he had a 90th percentile exit velocity of 107 miles an hour, which places him right ahead of Manny Machado. That's the type of power we're talking about with Gunnar Henderson. It's massive. He is huge raw. And, you know, this is a big kid, a big, strong kid. And he's unlike a lot of hitters for the Orioles. You know, he's a lefty, so he's going to not necessarily get dinged as much by the due dimensions at Camden Yards that have been nuking right-handed power. He's going to have that short porch in left field, and I think that he's a player who could take advantage of it. But generally, with Henderson, this is huge power, and there's huge speed here, too. You know, he's very much a plus runner right now at this point in his career. How long that lasts, I think, is a bigger question, but I think he could be a player who immediately gets you double-digit steals, could push 20 stolen bases, could top 20 stolen bases, to be honest. The Orioles have shown a willingness to run, and Henderson's going to get on base a lot because this, again, one of the best approaches of any prospect you'll see, a very much patient player who has not just patience, but incredible plate discipline itself. His chase rate in his debut was just 17.9%. While he didn't chase at all, barely chased, he didn't miss hittable pitches either. You know, his meatball swing rate was 87.5%. It just kind of goes to show that, you know, yes, he's patient, but he's patient because he's not swinging at pitches outside the zone. Because he's swinging at his hittable pitches, that's how you can distinguish just pure patient and passive hitters from the best plate discipline. And he has that type of plate discipline that will elevate his game. And I do think he's going to get on base a ton. I think he's going to hit for a solid average. And I think the power will come. I mean, I think there's a chance Gunnar Henderson could have a 2020 or 2015 season right away. And with a better Orioles lineup, with Adley Rutschman potentially hitting right in front of him, on base machine Adley Rutschman, he could really have really high run production right away as well. So I think he gives you a lot of upside at a fraction of the cost, and a lot of projection systems are simply just not very bullish on him this year. So I think there's a reason why he's falling in redraft formats. I wouldn't let that happen. I've seen him go as high as the second round in dynasty drafts, and I would not be necessarily opposed to that type of helium for him. He's going to be ranked 41 likely in the upcoming, currently is at the very least, in the upcoming Dynasty Top 500. I think that he's the real deal. And, you know, while of course he'll have some struggles as a rookie, and he does have some underlying swing and miss, it's not extreme. And I do think that he's going to hit the ground running for the most part. Now, after him, we have Nolan Arenado. And I mentioned Arenado as, you know, the aging slugger who's still got it, right? He's hit .273 with 32 home runs and 102 RBIs over the last 2 years. He's never had mammoth raw power, but he makes the most of it because he has great bat-to-ball ability and he lifts and pulls like few others. In fact, he's led Major League Baseball in pull side fly balls the last 2 years. And all of those home runs, all 64 of his home runs have gone to the pull side. I do think, you know, the approach should generally limit his batting average and balls in play, but because he rarely strikes out, I mean, his strikeout rate was 11% last year, he put so many balls in play that he should still drive a very high batting average despite this pull and lift, extreme pull and lift approach. You know, I think there's a chance he can continue to do the 290, 30, 100 type production. It may take a step back from what it was last year. You know, I think expecting 30 plus home runs from Arenado moving forward may be a bit too much to ask, but I think that it's still going to be solid production. He's still very athletic. He's still a fantastic defensive third baseman as well. I think he's going to age fairly gracefully. And, you know, he's really not struggled necessarily outside of Coors Field. I think he remains very much a fairly stable asset, despite the fact that he's going to be 32 years old shortly into the season. So I think we could see up to 5 more years of solid production from Arenado. I wouldn't necessarily bank on it. Banking on any player producing after age 35 is a risk, but I do feel he will produce. I do think he's in the middle of a strong lineup again. His home park does hurt him a little bit, but you know, again, I think that the approach and the way he just puts balls in the air to the bullseye is going to make the home runs fairly stable. And you know, the average may fluctuate up and down, but it's never going to get too bad as long as his contact rates hold. So I think he's still a guy who's going to give like a 270 to 290 hitter with home run totals approaching 30 year to year. So it's maybe not the highest upside option here. It's not as, doesn't have as much upside and potential as Gunnar Henderson, who legit could develop into like a 330 home run bat with some speed, like a top first round pick, like a pick player who's going to be drafted in the first round year to year. But it's stable production that we know, and a lot of people love that in redraft and in dynasty. I wouldn't sleep on Arenado as a player that, you know, you take toward the back half, back end of the top 50 overall in dynasty. I would be willing to do it because, especially in shallower formats, with the thinning of third base, he's going to be one of the last third base options on the board before the big cliff in dynasty formats that are shallow or in all dynasty formats. So I wouldn't be afraid to do it and just take a plunge with Arenado. It doesn't hurt to have older players on your team in Dynasty. You can always, you know, build around them with youth. So don't ignore Arenado despite his advancing age. The next group player of this group, and you can tell I've been focusing most of this podcast on the top options because of how bleh the rest of third base is, and I'll get to that in a moment. But Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman entered this season coming off of surgery and wrist surgery, and I mean, I think we can probably blame some of that, you know, some of his slow start on the wrist surgery. He did struggle to start the season, but over his final 94 games, he hit 288, 388, 514 with 17 home runs, 63 runs, and 65 RBIs. That's a 28 home run pace. And 103 runs and 106 RBIs. And I think that that type of production he could see over a full season for sure. And I mean, I think that you're sort of, if he can get to that, he should be ranked and drafted much higher than he is. But no one's really expecting it over a full season. He hasn't really done it since 2019. And I think we can safely ignore the 2019 season for most players, especially players like Alex Bregman, who have limited power. I mean, he hits homers, but it's for the same reason Nolan Arenado hits homers. He lifts and pulls the ball very well, and he has elite bat to ball ability and elite plate discipline. So he picks his spots and he maximizes his power, despite the fact that it is very firmly borderline average. But you know, I think that Bregman moving forward is very possibly going to get back to the 280, 25 plus type seasons that we'd expected from him, if not for, you know, the injuries and just poor production generally. He's another player who gets a massive boost in OBP formats as well. Arguably, he jumps two tiers in OBP formats. He would be, you know, ahead of Nolan Arenado, I think firmly, and you know, he'd be behind Gunnar Henderson, but he'd be jumping up into tier four, in the rankings that the article that I put out. So you know, Bregman's a player who I think is not for everyone because people just don't fully buy or trust him for several reasons, but he's such a good hitter. He's one of the best hitters in baseball when he's on his game. And even though the power is not huge, I think he can get to the point where he's going to be a very productive 5x5 player again as soon as this year. And you know, he hits in the middle of a very good Houston Astros lineup, and the run production is going to be there for him. So I think he definitely could get to 280, 25, 100, 100 again this year. All right, it's time. It is time to talk about the rest of third base, which is not good, guys. I think the way I'm going to approach this is talk about the younger options first before getting to the veteran options and what the pros and cons for each of these players. Let's dive into three of the younger options that have had major league success to one point or another, and what can we expect from them moving forward, and what kind of potential upside could they bring to the table if things kind of click for them? The first one of this group is Jose Miranda. Jose Miranda had a very up and down season. It was a roller coaster ride. He is one of the worst starts you'll see at the major league level. His first 14 games, he hit was 0.094, less than 100 at batting average, and basically was powerless. And then he went on absolute monstrous tear for 3 months, where he hit 330 with 12 home runs and 49 RBIs, and he made tons of hard contact, 48.3% hard contact rate, or hard hit rate in 66 games. So what type of player is Miranda? I've made this comp before, and I kind of feel good about it. I think he's Wilmer Flores, but with more power. He legit has more raw power than Wilmer Flores, and I think a lot of what Wilmer Flores does is very similar to what Jose Miranda can and will do. You know, they're both high contact hitters with aggressive approaches and questionable defensive like roles that may bounce around the infield. Ultimately, Miranda's likely to be the starting third baseman for the Twins this year, but you know, I think moving forward, he may be a player who kind of moves from first to third to second, sort of just like Wilmer Flores. And you know, when I make this comp, I'm not necessarily bashing Miranda. We need to talk about Wilmer Flores to make this make sense. You know, Wilmer Flores has averaged 261 and 21 home runs over 600 plate appearances in his career. That is sort of what I see Miranda doing, but maybe with a little bit more power. And the power that I'm talking about for Miranda will probably play in terms of average, not and doubles, not home runs necessarily. So I see him as like a 20 to 25 home run hitter potentially that could hit like 270 to 280. Now, that maybe isn't the sexiest profile at the position, but I think that it's a very strong one, and it is often underrated in fantasy, especially in 5x5, in standard formats. It shouldn't be underrated. So I think of all of these next group of options, I think Miranda's the one I feel best about. And he is ranked 13th for a reason at the position. I think that there's a chance we could see him tap more into what he did mid-season over the course of a full season and, you know, kind of break out a bit further this year. Beyond that, the next player at the position who we've long waited for a breakout is Ke'Bryan Hayes. You know, I've made this comp to him for DJ LeMahieu for Hayes, and I think it's very apt. Both of them make a ton of hard contact, but it goes on the ground to up the middle or the opposite way. They have incredibly similar batted ball profiles. It's eerie how similar they are. Both right-handed hitters as well. What we see with Hayes right now, he could be a little bit like a young DJ LeMahieu, but outside of Coors Field right now. I think that's what he could be, which has value, right? He stole 20 bases last year. You would think the new rule changes should benefit a player like Hayes, who's not necessarily, you know, all that fast. I mean, he's basically an average runner generally. I think he could get to 20 stolen bases again, especially with new rule changes and the willingness to run. The question is he ever going to lift? Is he ever going to pull? And, I mean, he just hasn't, and I just don't think it's necessarily going to happen. I think he could get to better batting average. I mean, he could get to 280, with 15 homers and 20 stolen bases, maybe. I mean, that's very good, right? That has great dynasty implications, especially at third base, where speed is kind of difficult to find in a lot of ways. But there's also a chance he could be what he's been and what DJ LeMahieu's been the last 2 years and hit like 260 without much power and or run production. And that's the big concern with Hayes. He could just be an empty producer that only gives you value at stolen bases, and that's a concern I have. We're still waiting for the you know, big breakout here for now 26-year-old. I'm not sure it's going to happen. I wouldn't bank on it, but I do think that his ADP bakes that into it a little bit. Especially I've seen him falling in Dynasty. I think he's falling, you know, outside the top 150, in some cases outside the top 200. And, you know, if you haven't had don't have a third baseman at that point, I think he's a fine player to bank on that. He's going to be a regular. He's a fantastic defender still. And I do think that even if he doesn't get to where we hope he's going to get to, I still think he'll give you a fairly stable floor. And I think he'll be better than what he's been in the past. So even if he's only like a 260 to 270 hitter with double, like 10 home runs and, you know, double-digit stolen bases, I mean, that's not terrible, and that'll play, especially if you have that type of production banked year to year, and there is upside for more. So I do kind of like Hayes, given where his cost is trending, but I'm still very leery about whether or not he's actually going to do the things we hope he'll do. The final one that we've also been waiting for a breakout from is Alec Baum, who's also 26 years old. He's older than Ke'Bryan Hayes by about half a year. And he sort of took a step forward last year. He hit 280 with 13 home runs last year and solid run production in the middle of the Phillies lineup. He lifted the ball more last year. He made more contact last year. So there's a lot to like in some ways with Alec Baum. The problems I have, however, are that he really does have bad platoon splits. He struggles against right-handed pitchers in a big way. He hit 253, 285, 344. These struggles have been ongoing since 2021. You know, he just hasn't been able to hit righties. And if he can't do that, he's just going to struggle generally. And he's also an off-field hitter, which does help him hit for good, strong average, but it does limit his power production in games. He is sort of a hit-over-power player, and he's always been that. He has that like underlying plus power that's promised by his huge frame, but he just doesn't really get to it in games all that often. I think that there's a chance he could develop into something similar to what we've seen from like Ty France, with like a 290, 20 home run upside, which France has as well. Pecota actually projects Baum to hit 281 with 17 home runs this year. But also like France, I think that Baum could move to first base, and it could happen as soon as next year. Rhys Hoskins is a free agent after the year. I think it could mean that Baum moves to first base next year, especially since his defense is not trending the right way. You know, he has had poor deserved runs prevented, and he just doesn't pass the eye test. I mean, he notoriously committed a ton of throwing errors in one game this past year with the Phillies. And while he did make some improvements there at third base, I just don't think it's necessarily going to be a long-term option for him. And if that production I just mentioned, you know, 280, 15 home runs-ish, if that is at first base, that just, I don't know, it just doesn't quite look, not quite as attractive for fantasy. And he's also very much an aggressive hitter that gets dinged in OBP formats. So he's certainly behind both Miranda and Hayes for me. But if you've missed out on those two and you're after pick 200 and Baum's on the board next to all these older veterans, you know, it's a worthwhile stab to hope that he takes that next step forward. You know, he does have the draft pedigree, and there is a lot to like about what we see underneath it all, underneath his performance, even if there are some concerns I have. All right, well, let's talk about some veterans, and I'm not going to spend too long on these players because I do want to get to the prospects of the position and spend some time there. All right, well, I think what you're going to find at the position for the more established veterans is a lot of one or two category wonders. They're just not going to be players who are going to give you consistent, even three or four category production. And there's a reason why they're down here. The first one of all these players is Eugenio Suarez. He left Great American Ballpark, and many of us thought that his power would just sink. But he yet again hit 30 home runs last year. It took a crazy second half to get there with 15 home runs over the final 2 months. But he's hit 30 plus home runs for 5 straight years. And I think that there's no real reason to think that he's not going to do it again next year. The big question with Suarez is he going to actually hit for average? He managed to hit over 230 last year, but he had career worst contact rates last year. He had a 5.3% decline in zone contact rate. He has an extreme fly ball approach, pull and fly ball approach. And, I just don't think he's necessarily going to give you much average at all. He's over since 2020, he's only hit 215. That's been his average. And while he's given you power, 32 home run average pace over 600 plate appearances, that type of batting average is very problematic in 5x5 formats. If you're drafting Eugenio Suarez, you're hoping he hits 230. You're hoping he hits 230 to 240. But there's a very real chance you could get a hitter that hits around 200. And that's my big concern with Suarez. He's also going to turn 32 this year. I just think there's a lot of risk, and where he's being drafted in redraft formats is, for me, I'm just like going to stay away at that draft cost. He's getting drafted at, on average, in NFBC 15 team draft champions leagues at 160. I'm not going to draft him at that point. Just not there at all. There's other third basemen that are later that I am feel better about. I think that the chance at Suarez just doesn't give you any average at all, and just only gives you home runs, is so high that he's a player who I'm generally fading in all formats. He's still outside the top 200, not too far even in Dynasty, partly because third base is a dumpster fire. But I would just exercise a lot of caution approaching Eugenio Suarez, and it's not a bad time to actually try and move him, especially given how the state of the position, as I discussed earlier, and his advancing age. The next player is a player that Brett Sayre and a few players at Baseball Prospectus, I guess, still stand for, and I am kind of ambivalent about, or even honestly against drafting this player, and that's Ryan McMahon. Look, he plays in Coors Field. Yay, he hits well in Coors Field, of course, but he does not hit it all away. He's hit 215, 301, 351 away from Coors in his career, and he's only ever once been a league average hitter by DRC Plus, and that was in 2021. Yet, of course, he's under contract through 2027. He's gonna play. So yeah, that's, I mean, yeah, that's great. But I think that he really is a player that is best used and utilized in daily formats, particularly in shallower daily formats where you can kind of target the matchups, where you play him at home against all right-hand pitching. You maybe sometimes play him at home against lefties, but otherwise you don't play him away in away games, and you don't play him against lefties. You can sort of do this in weekly and kind of like map out what his week's going to look like. Obviously, you start him in home weeks, but if he's on the road the entire week, you kind of bench him. That's just not a player I love to roster. I don't like having a player who I just can't, who I'm kind of leery about putting in my lineup any given week. And that's what McMahon is for me. I mean, he is turned into a fairly stable 250, 20 plus option at the position. That's fine. I mean, that's fine. He even tosses in some stolen bases. I don't know if they're really something that I would bank on year to year. But, at a position where even 250, 20 home runs is actually pretty is startable, I mean, McMahon's a fine guy to have. Plus, he has some, upside beyond what he's done. Since August last year, over the last 2 months, he hit 270, 322, 500 with 12 home runs. Over a full season, that's a 33 home run pace. there is legit power here. I mean, McMahon's always had power. He's just not necessarily lifted and pulled all that much. And he started to do that a little bit last year. I think there's a chance we could see it break out. Not that I really, really trust it at all, given the away issues he has and the issues he has against lefties. But there is upside that he could be like a 260, 270 hitter with 25 to 30 home runs. He has that upside. And he does play in Coors. So there's some things to like. My other concern that I haven't mentioned yet is that because he struggles against lefties and Elias Montero is on the roster, there's a chance he gets forced into a strong side platoon role and loses even more playing time. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing for you for fantasy because that means he just isn't hitting against lefties, which isn't bad because he's bad against lefties. But it just means less playing time, less run production opportunities for him, and I'm just leery. So his ranking, where I have him in the top 40 dynasty third baseman, is more based on Brett saying we need to push him up, and me just being not willing to push back on it. But I would not have him over this next player, and that's Matt Chapman. Matt Chapman is a three true outcome slugger these days. He has flashed decent bat to ball in the past. His bat to ball ability and contact rates did improve last year, but he has big power. I mean, that's the one thing we can kind of bank with Matt Chapman. It's plus plus power, plays to all fields. He's a player who should hit 30 home runs. Not that he has done it ever, he's only done it once. But he should hit 30 plus home runs, especially with the Rogers Center's dimensions changing. They're moving in the fences. They're moving up the fences ever so slightly. But for a player like Matt Chapman, that's great because he puts the ball straight up into the air. His launch angle approaches 20 degrees, his average launch angle. He puts big towering fly balls in the air. Shorter fences, even if they're taller, are a good thing for Matt Chapman. I think he could get back to 30 home runs this year. He hits in the middle of a pretty good Blue Jays lineup. I mean, he's going to have like Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hitting ahead of him. And I think that he could conceivably get to a point where he's outproducing both Eugenio Suarez and Ryan McMahon very easily. I think he has more upside than both of them personally. There is real risk here because the strikeouts are a serious concern for Matt Chapman because I mentioned he's a three true outcome slugger. He is patient and he has swing and miss issues, which results in a ton of strikeouts and a lot of walks. And because of that, because he walks and strikes out so much, it actually limits his home run output because he doesn't put as many balls into play. So I think if he can make more contact and bring that strikeout rate down some, he could truly get back to like even a 35 plus home run output. So Chapman's a player who I'm willing to of all these vets, he's the guy I would target if the cost is right. But again, like a lot of these players, their draft cost is elevated. It's inflated because of how poor the position is and how shallow it is. The last of these vets I want to touch on is Johan Moncada. Johan Moncada has always kind of teased his potential. He's a former top prospect. He had a monstrous 2019 season. Yet, he was been pretty mediocre generally. He's basically turned into a solid defender, but a poor offensive force, which is, I think, something no one really thought would happen when he was a prospect. The 2019 production that he had was almost certainly due to the juice ball. Last year he had plenty of injuries, and I'm thinking that a lot of those injuries probably were responsible for his horrible season. I mean, he had 81 DRC plus. It was bad. And I think at his best, when he's healthy, he's a line drive hitter, uses the whole field. He doesn't hit for the averages that his batting average on balls in play might suggest. I mean, he has a career 342 batting average on balls in play. He just has poor contact rates, and his approach, which vacillates between being slightly aggressive and being way too passive, just causes him not to quite hit for the averages that you would expect him to hit for. I think he could be similar to what he was in 2021, maybe with even with a little bit more home run power. But I wouldn't necessarily expect any more of that. And he doesn't run anymore either. You know, his speed has really taken a step back. But I could see him getting back to like a 260, 15 to 20 home run hitter, especially since, you know, I think the new shift rule should help him. He had a very steep difference without a shift last year as well. So I don't mind his cost right now. I think that his draft cost in both redraft and in dynasty has fallen so far that I think he's a reasonable buying option, especially if you've missed out on a lot of the more expensive options at third base. Right now, Moncada's average draft position in those 15 team leagues is 293, which is very late. And I think that taking Moncada late like that is a worthwhile gamble because, again, he's a good defender. He's going to get playing time. He's a switch hitter in a lineup that really needs left-handed bats. I do think that he's going to see regular playing time. I think there is upside for him to be better than what he's been lately, even better than what he was in 2021. So I don't mind taking a stab at Moncada. He is still just 27 years old. He'll turn 28 this year. He's technically in his prime. Granted, prime varies batter to batter, and he may be at past his prime for him personally, but I think on the face of it all, there's a chance that we could see Moncada take a step forward and be a very good value right now this year. I've already gotten some shares of Moncada. I think he's a worthwhile stab at right now, especially if he ends up being like your second third baseman on your roster in some formats. All right, let's move on to the prospects of the position, because these are fun. It starts with Jordan Walker, and I will note at the outset that Jordan Walker is unlikely to be a third baseman or third base eligible for very long. He's already playing the outfield. He played exclusively in the outfield in the AFL, played a lot of center field, actually, and he has pretty good sprints, very good sprint speed, high-end sprint speed. Once he gets going, he's fast, surprisingly. Big kid, but he played some center field. I mean, the Cardinals have been somewhat reluctant to put speed in center field. Like Tyler O'Neill hasn't really played much in center field, for example. And I think Walker probably profiles long-term in right field quite well. But for now, he is third base eligible in basically every format you'll imaginable. And because of that, I think it's important to talk about him as a third baseman this year, because he's going to arrive, and he could arrive very soon. He's a bit blocked. I think that's the thing I want to mention with Walker, is that the outfield right now in St. Louis is pretty full. You know, we have aforementioned Tyler O'Neill, there's Lars Nootbaar, everyone's favorite sleeper breakout or post-sleeper at this point. There's Dylan Carlson, and all three of them are going to be vying for playing time in the outfield. And at DH, they've got Juan Yepes and Nolan Gorman. So, and even Alec Burleson, all of them on the 40-man roster, all of them players that would kind of be eating into Walker's playing time. Walker also is not Rule 5 eligible until December 2024. I think that banking on production at the major league level from Walker this year is a stretch because of just the roster construction of the Cardinals right now. That said, he probably should come up this year because I think he is would be one of their better hitters right away. He has ridiculous power. His power matches most hitters in Major League Baseball. It would be among the elite right away. We would see him enter right around where, you know, O'Neill Cruz is. He'd be right up there. He'd come in and make loud contact in a huge way. And he does, like I said, have speed. And he stole 22 bases last year. It's not truly a fluke. I think he can give you double-digit stolen bases, especially early in his career. The big questions I have with Walker moving forward is he going to lift enough to get to his power in games? And is he going to make enough contact? Because his contact rates still are just not exceptional. He makes such hard contact that it's not really a concern. And his contact rates are not bad enough for it to be a serious problem either. So He's right now almost like a hit over power prospect despite his ridiculous raw. He still gets to his power in games, but he looks like, I guess, similar to someone like a Rafael Devers rather than, someone who's going to necessarily hit for 40 home runs despite the power underlying it all being 40 home run power. But I really like Walker. I think he could easily develop into something like what we're seeing with Rafael Devers. It'll ultimately be in the outfield, though, even though he is, again, third base eligible this year. The next third base prospect is Josh Young. Look, Josh Young is going to have detractors because of his debut. His debut was not great in a lot of ways. He flashed power for sure, but he had a disastrous plate approach in his debut, and it was disastrous in AAA as well. During his debut, he had 39 strikeouts to 4 walks. That's not great. Not great at all. He's not necessarily an incredibly aggressive hitter. He makes plenty of contact ultimately as well. I think that he's going to be a player who will hit for average, maybe better average than some people think. He is a tad. His plate discipline needs work, of course, but he's shown solid plate discipline in the past. This was a kind of a season where he was thrust right into AAA, coming off of another injury. I think he's going to be a player who is going to be the starting third baseman all year for the, or most of the year at the very least, for the Rangers. He's 25 years old, a bit older. I think the big risk with Josh Young is that if he struggles, his value is going to tank. But if he performs, he's a player who could easily enter that group that I talked about earlier today and be right next to like someone like an Alex Bregman, because the potential for him to develop into like a 270, 30 home run hitter is certainly there. But I think that, there are concerns. And I imagine that where we have him ranked right now, 12th among prospects, it's probably higher than most. But the proximity and the upside is very high. And he makes a lot of hard contact. And I think he's going to hit for both average and power. And, the Rangers do need a power force that could be like a fifth hitter in that lineup. And I think he could be that guy driving a lot of runs for that Rangers team that's trying to compete right now. But also the big concern that I mentioned already is that he also could struggle and the Rangers move on from him in the short term and move to like Duran or someone else at third base, and until Young can kind of get his feet under him again. So he's a riskier player than you'd expect for a 25-year-old former top prospect, or 25-year-old with his type of draft pedigree and the performance he's had at the upper levels. But he's still got a lot of upside. He's going to start. He's very cheap in a lot of formats right now, despite, I think a lot of people being fairly aggressive on him. I will note, right now in 15-team formats, his average draft position is average draft position is 221. He comes after that tier of veteran third baseman, except for Moncada that I talked about. I'm not certain I would ever take the plunge at that cost for him in redraft formats. I'm just not really confident in him right away, given his struggles last year. But again, he's gonna be there, he's gonna start, and there is legit upside with Josh Young. The next third base prospect I want to touch on, and I don't want to belabor the point on these players, but the next one is Curtis Meade. I saw Curtis Meade when he was with Charleston and fairly not well known, and he really was one of the players who kind of like stood out to me during batting practice and during in games. This is a player who's made a lot of progress since then too. His plate approach has improved dramatically. His swing rate has dropped by 7%. He's been more patient. He's putting more balls in the air. He has better plate discipline. He's looking like a plus hit plus power prospect. And I mean, while the hits will still needs work, I think the power is very much there. The hard hit rates are exceptional. His 90th percentile average exit velocity is already approaching 107 miles an hour in the minors. He would be right around Ke'Bryan Hayes and Ryan McMahon in terms of 90th percentile exit velocity. He doesn't have much standing in his way on the Rays roster right now. I know the Rays extended Yandy Diaz, and Yandy Diaz is coming off a fantastic season. I do not know or think that it's necessarily the case that Diaz is going to play third base or first base over someone like Meade. I think Meade, there's room for both of them in the lineup. I think Meade could certainly supplant someone like an Isaac Paredes, could supplant Harold Ramirez. I think Meade could definitely arrive as soon as early this year. He is on the 40-man roster. I think he's probably underrated in a lot of dynasty formats. He's ranked, I believe, 14th by the prospect team overall among all prospects. He will be ranked, I believe, 15th in our top prospect rankings for fantasy. I did make a play for him to be 12th ahead of Josh Young. I think there's huge upside here, and I think he's going to arrive soon. The last of this group of top third base prospects is Brett Beatty. Brett Beatty, for a second there, was out of a short-term path to playing time when the Mets were tied to Carlos Correa. But now that Correa is back with the Twins and the Mets are just running out Eduardo Escobar at third base, there's a real chance that we see Beatty, carve out a significant role with the Mets roster as early this year. Escobar is nearing the end of his career. While he had a fantastic second half last year, and it's probably because of that, is going to retain his position. He doesn't do a lot. He does some things not very well. He is in the last year of his 2-year contract. There is a 2024 club option unlikely to be picked up. So Beatty likely arrives this year. He like in a big way, and he likely is their starting third baseman next year. And he has big upside. This is a player who has improved plate discipline. He has excellent plate discipline. He has had improved bat to ball ability and making more contact. He has big power. He's putting more balls in the air. He hits the ball hard with a lot of line drives. The prospect team thinks that he is a potential 280, 25 to 30 home run hitter. I think that's possible as well. And it also is going to come with a solid on-base percentage. I think early in his career, there is going to be swing and miss. He's a big kid. There is some underlying swing and miss issues. He's never going to have the loudest, best contact rate out there. But much like someone like a Gunnar Henderson, whose contact rates are not like stellar, his zone contact rates are like 80%. Brett Beatty makes such hard contact to all fields that I think he's going to still drive a strong average. It is put ha, this still has potential to mute his power output. He has massive raw. This is a plus raw power hitter as well. So I think Beatty is a player who still remains a top prospect, a top elite prospect, top 30 fantasy prospect in my opinion. And I think that a lot of people are still not there on him, and he still represents a good buying value. The last prospect, last two prospects, last prospect that is going to produce this year that I wanted to talk about was Spencer Steer. I think you're going to see mixed opinions about him everywhere. He had an absolute disastrous debut last year. I do not think he's going to be a big power hitter at all. I will note, his 90th percentile exit velocity in his debut was 101.4 miles an hour, which is below average. That said, even in double and triple A last year, it was still borderline, right? It was 102.8 miles an hour. So this is not a big power hitter. He does maximize his power in a lot of ways because of his contact ability and his plate discipline. Both are well above average, and he does pull and lift fairly well. So I do think, with that in mind, and with the fact that he's going to be calling Great American Ballpark his home park, he conceivably could do a lot of what we saw with Jonathan India in 2021 this year. He could be like the Jonathan India this year, just without the speed that India had in 2021. So I wouldn't sleep on Steer, and I would say that Steer is a fine target, particularly in redraft formats where his value right now is very reasonable. His ADP in those 15-team leagues I mentioned is a 401, and I think he needs to be around 300 personally. So I think he's a great bargain given that he's got nobody standing in his way to playing time at third base after the Reds cut Mike Moustakas. And I think a lot of people are off him because of his debut. So I think he's got sneaky upside. I wouldn't get too carried away. I don't think Steer's going to be like a 25 home run hitter. I don't think he's going to be like a 280 hitter. But he could conceivably be like a 260, 20 home run hitter this year. He could. So I think at his cost, he represents a great buying opportunity. The final player I want to talk about at the position and close the podcast on is Junior Caminero. Junior Caminero is a player who's going to have helium. I think he's a potential top 50 prospect as soon as early this year. He's just coming off absolutely crushing the Australian Winter League as an 18-year-old, mind you. I saw him a bit late in the season in Charleston. I'll get to see him early this year there as well. And, he's an impressive player. He's not necessarily all that big or athleticness, but he can hit and he has legit power already. So I think he could conceivably develop into like a, there's a chance that he could be like a plus hit, plus power player long term. I'm not saying that that's going to happen by any means. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done here. I will note, this is what he did in the Australian Baseball League. He hit 303, 368, 613 with 14 home runs, second most in the league at 18 years old. And I think that there's a chance he goes to starts in A-ball, goes right to high A, and then goes double A, all at 19 years old, and is one of the top prospects in baseball this time next year. So I think if you're going to be buying a young prospect at third base, other than Cam Collier, which we talked about when we talked about the top 100, or the first year player draft. If you're buying a young prospect here at third base, I would be buying Caminero at his current cost. I think there's a very chance he's, again, a top 50 prospect in due time. All right, well, that will do it for third base. It's a longer episode this week because it's such an interesting position and the top of the position is so strong. But next week, we're going to be talking about shortstop. Brett Sayers should be back on the podcast. And that position is fun. So thank you for listening, and I hope you all join us again next week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.